Recovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Recovery Today. My name is Jim Smith, and it's about halfway through. I think this is show number 12, I believe so. But my guest today is a very old friend, and his name's Joe. But I think there was a film, wasn't there, Joe? My Name is Joe.
There was.
Yeah, it was very good as well. He isn't that, Joe.
A recovering alcoholic.
That's it. Yeah. Anyway, I'll just let Joe introduce himself and we'll take it from there.
Okay, thanks, Jim. So my name's Joe. I'm an addictions therapist professionally and I'm also a recovering addict. Mm. And I've worked in a number of areas, but I worked for the Forward Trust, which used to be known as the RAPT, the Rehabilitation of Addicted Prisoners Trust. Mm. I was just talking to Jim. Mm. It's actually 23 and a half years. This is the 24th year that I've worked for them. But essentially, my profession is addiction and helping people with addiction.
Mm. Yeah, so you've worked all that time, and I believe you're there's going to be a change ahead, isn't there, Joe?
Yeah, I've decided to move on professionally, I've just taken on a new job that I've been offered. Okay. And is it okay to say who I work for?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I'm actually going to be now coming out of working in prisons. Mm. Although I have had private practice and lots of experience in private practice, I'm leaving the prisons and I'm now going to work at the Priory Hospital in Roehampton.
That's great. That's really good, Joe. Okay. So let's start at the beginning. You grew up in London.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
South London. Yeah.
South London, yeah. Yeah. Grew up in Vauxhall. Mm-hmm. Quite a small nuclear family, my mum and my dad, myself. Although I've got relatives, aunts and uncles who lived in Vauxhall, they were in Battersea.
Yeah.
And I used to see a lot of my family, extended family, quite a lot. So I went to school originally in Vauxhall.
Yeah.
And I also lived with my aunt in Battersea because my parents divorced. And that was just one of those things. As I said, we're quite an extended family, so it was very comfortable. Mm. And so I lived in Battersea for a while, moved from Vauxhall to Battersea.
Mm. How was school? Did you excel in sport or academia?
I was quite bright. Picked things up pretty quickly. I was good at football, actually, Jim, and I had a few trials for South London. I played for the school first team. You know, I was quite a good, proficient goal scorer. Loved the sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some respects, would have loved to have taken it up. It wasn't to be.
Yeah.
But academically, I left school quite early. Mm. I left school at 15. And and I started work, you know, by the time I was 16. Mm. So quite an early work career.
Yeah. Just going back, I suppose it's my nostalgia really that's prompting this. What kind of era regarding football were you?
I'll give you an idea, Jim. Yeah, I was born in South London. I was born in Willesden.
All right.
Yeah. But we lived in South London.
Yeah.
I'll give you an idea because I was in South London, but my team was Manchester United.
Ah, interesting.
Because the trio, George Best, Bobby Charlton, Dennis Law.
Yes,
George Best was my hero.
He was he? Yeah, yeah. Well, I was hoping you'd say that because my dad used to take me to Crystal Palace, but he also took me to Wembley a few times. And I saw Dennis Law and George Best play for the rest of the world against England. Yeah, so they're great memories, you know. And I see. So that was But Manchester United, they've got. I mean, what's it? Their fans are everywhere, aren't they?
Oh, worldwide, they've probably got the biggest following, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. All over the world.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually went to a derby match a couple of years ago, Man City, Man United. Mm. And went to Old Trafford, and it was the most amazing experience because I hadn't been there before.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And it was, and we won 4-1.
Wow. Wow, yeah.
And it was a brilliant game.
Yeah.
It was quite an experience.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So you're growing up. What about music? Did that come into your life early?
Yeah. Well, I attribute my sort of joy and love of music partly to my mother, who was always playing music.
Was she?
Yeah, records and things.
Oh, right.
And
it was quite
a big influence on me.
Yeah.
But I also had this lovely aunt who wasn't sort of, you know, too much. She was about 10 years older than me. So when I was 10, she was 20, etc. She actually got me interested in the Rolling Stones and groups like that.
Yes, yeah.
So she was quite a big influence because she was a hippie.
Sure.
And I got very much into sort of rock music and things like that at quite an early age, when a lot of my friends weren't interested.
Really?
Yeah, they were kind of, you know, more interested in just contemporary, straight stuff.
So
whereas
straight pop,
I was going for Humble Pie, Led Zeppelin, and all that sort of stuff.
But
always had a love of music.
Yeah. So what was this, about 14, 15?
Yeah, 14. I was becoming a hippie myself and starting to dress like a hippie. And other characteristics that went along with that, if you take my meaning.
Yeah, John. Yeah, I know. yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Early influences.
Yeah. Well, look, it seems a good time to play your first choice of record, really, or choice of track. It's Jeff Beck, isn't it?
Yeah. I just thought, you know, it kind of captured the spirit of youth. You know, I was 14, 15 around this time. And although it's quite an anthemic song, because I used to go to a lot of dances and things. And I just have fond memories of sort of dancing along and we're all sort of screaming out, you know, the chorus of
Hi, yes, oh, so that's oh. it. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
It's great.
Okay, well, let's play it. Jeff Beck, Hi Ho Silver Lining. Well, it's Jeff Beck, Hi Ho Silver Lining. Yeah, he hasn't got many good words to say about that, Jeff Beck, but it was very good for him, wasn't it?
I think it was number one or successful.
It was for a long time. But he's a great musician anyway, isn't he, Jeff Beck?
Yeah.
So this is, you're around about 14, 15, you know, going to dances and... What about, Joe, your first encounter, really, with alcohol and or drugs? When was that?
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting because it was around about 14, 15 when I started. As I said, I was getting into parties and drinking then, you know. And I think, you know, my aunt, as I said, was a hippie and she was a bit of an influence. So I was drinking, you know, a little bit with friends, parties and weekends. But then I discovered cannabis. I tried it for the first time. It was a kind of mixed affair because I kind of liked it, but I also didn't like it. But I liked the idea of, you know, getting stoned. And I liked the hippie culture and the rest of it. So that was really, I suppose, the early influence for me to sort of get into trying things and, you know, sampling. And, you know, it was quite... there was a part of me, I think, that sort of liked the idea of, you know, changing the way I felt.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, did it, you know, was that a good feeling when it changed you?
Yeah, it took you out of yourself. And it was it was nice to escape for a little while.
You
know, whatever troubles might be lurking or whatever. And I never really thought about it that much, but I think, you know, it was probably an adolescent period, but probably an unsettling time for me because my parents were divorced.
Yeah, of course,
So,
you know, different people have different patterns, and was it instant with you or was it insidious, you know, you're using? Was it, you know, did it...
It stayed, Jim. It had started.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, once it started, it sort of kept rolling. I think, you know, I even, at one stage, bizarrely, because I went to school in South London, and ours was the only school with a chapel. And we, you know, like most kids, certain aspects are boring, and, you know, the chapel was boring.
Yeah.
And extraordinarily, it's not something that I did for very long, but I did, I remember some of the guys were sniffing plaster remover.
Right,
and they would go off on
this
little mini trip, and it was, you know, looking back, it was, you know, it was probably not a good idea.
No.
But I tried it in the chapel, and I almost sort of passed out. But that wasn't something that I sort of dwelt on. But I think what it did was it showed my openness to trying things, you know, and I think that that sort of that was what was opened up that remained. So while I was at school, it was drinking and cannabis. Mostly.
And when you left school, you moved into the world of work. Did you get many qualifications at school?
No, I left early, as I said, because of my situation with my parents.
That's right, yeah.
And my... And I kind of felt like I needed to support my mum a bit. For such a young person, it seems extreme. But I guess I was maybe wanted to take the place of my... You know, support her.
Yeah.
So I felt I needed to work.
And
didn't have qualifications, but my mother was quite supportive. And I think she wanted me to help me in some way.
Sure, yeah.
So she said she was willing to pay for further education or career.
Right, yeah.
And it was quite interesting because at that time, I suppose I was quite conscious of the way I looked and stuff like that, and wanting to attract girls and things like that.
Yeah.
So I used to go to a hairdresser's in the West End, which is, you know, because I used to have long hair. And she said, I'll pay for you to get your hair cut. So she was bribing me to get my hair cut. And I'll take you out and I'll buy you a meal. So she took me to this hairdresser's in the West End.
Yeah.
And this was right in the middle of, I didn't know what I was going to do work-wise.
Yeah.
And this guy who cut my hair, he was a Spanish guy. He had a family and kids and he had a nice lifestyle. And he offered me a job.
Really?
Working at the salon on Saturdays.
Yeah,
and I just thought, well, why not?
Why not,
You know, I don't know what else I'm going to do.
No.
So I started doing this Saturday work.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. And then I thought, well, I'll give this a go. It seems like a nice career. It's an answer here. So I thought, I'll have a go at this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my mother actually paid for me to go and train at Vidal Sassoon in Bond Street.
Good heavens.
The school of hairdressing.
Well, yes. Where I mean,
Vidal went and everybody.
Sure, yeah.
And Jim, this was this was the beginning of a lifestyle for me that I just didn't know was going to happen as possible.
Yeah.
So I did the training.
Mm.
And when I completed the training, I got myself a job in Knightsbridge in this really niche hairdressing salon called Sweeney's. In Beacon Place in Knightsbridge. And it was full of the coolest guys.
Yes.
All with long hair and cowboy boots and jeans. And everyone in society used to come to this salon.
Yeah.
Lords and ladies, but also musicians.
They would.
And for the next 10 years, and this is where I was introduced to cocaine.
Right, yeah.
And that, anyway, this lifestyle included cocaine because everybody was taking cocaine.
Yeah.
And so this was exciting for me.
Of course.
It's taken me away from humdrum.
Totally understand. And,
you know, so there's a lot of appeal there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I spent the next 10 years working and training as a hairdresser and working with some of the most fascinating people.
Yes. I suppose what I'm so surprised or amazed is because my dad was a hairdresser, and I trained as a hairdresser, but not at Sassoon. It was a government training. It was a government training course. You know, when I was still drinking, because I thought one morning I thought I'd changed my life, and I went on this course, but I only stayed there, a few weeks. But I suppose growing up with a dad who was in hairdressing, and then and hairdressing. I had a haircut the other day, and I'm very lucky. I mean, it's a high class issue, really. I'm 70 years old, and I've still got my hair.
Yeah,
and but I go to one guy, and he's been 10 years. He lives in Sevenoaks, so I drive an hour to have my hair cut.
Yeah, that's
because
it's
so important.
Of course, it's personal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very personal.
And you like the way he does it, and you have a connection.
That's that connection.
I know.
So it's much more. Well, it's much more than just getting your hair cut. It's you're communicating with people. Right. It must.
Well, in a funny way, I look back now because having ended up in counselling, training as a big counsellor, I think that was my training ground.
Well, I'm sure it was
listening to people.
Yeah.
And
then, definitely.
You know, opening up to you.
Yeah.
It's very much a part of that.
Very much so. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. It really is. No, I think, you know, that's how you, obviously found your way into working in that way with people.
Yeah.
I mean, I found my way in recovery. I was cleaning windows and I had to go self-employed. That I had these few clients, you know, and I used to spend hours with them.
Right.
But not cleaning their windows, just listening to them.
Yeah,
I thought after that, I'd like to work with people. It's fascinating, isn't it? How themes and patterns.
Yeah.
So you were there. This was in your, all through your teens, was it? Into your 20s?
Well, I was, I started when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, actually, Fidel Sassoon, 17, 18.
Mm.
Yeah. And I stayed in that career until I was 30.
Oh, I see,
is when I got into recovery.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Just incidentally, Vidal Sassoon, or Vidal Sassoon, did you ever, I mean, was he around then? Was he alive?
He was in America.
Oh, he was in America.
But he had, the people who were running the shops, they were quite, they had quite a lot of sort of stature as well.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the guys I worked with, God bless him, he's dead now.
Yeah.
Because at one point I had a break from Knightsbridge Sweeney's and I went to work in Kings Road, Chelsea for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
With a guy called Gavin Hodge.
Yeah.
Who actually was one of the people who encouraged me to get into recovery.
So, it's fascinating, isn't it, when we look back, Joe, what we do can determine what we do at a later stage. And anyway, what you said earlier, that you were introduced to cocaine whilst working in Knightsbridge, it was abundant, I suppose, wasn't it, in those circles?
It was. Clients would take it, staff would take
it.
It was very, there was lots of social aspect to that career. So I would get invited to places where there was cocaine.
You know,
it just became the norm to take it. And like I'd said earlier, I think for me that addictive personality had been opened up. So I took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah, that's right. And you were still living with your mum all through this?
Oh, God, no.
No,
I don't want to dwell on this too much, but there was a tragedy. My mum died when I was 19. I will say this, probably that's the period I got into heroin. And I think it was the grief.
But that
got a grip on me, and it took me 10 years to get rid of, to get out of that. Because I was, as I said, I was 19. And so, heroin was a different drug, as most people know. It's not really a social drug.
No.
But it did get hold of me eventually, and it probably stopped me in my career. You know, because I was doing quite well. I was very fortunate. As I said, there's a lot of celebrity-ish lifestyle. You know, mixing with those sort of people. I tried, you know, it wasn't so much that. It was that the opportunity was there for so much more. But I think, you know, because I actually did some working on film sets and things like that.
Some
private work. And lots of musicians would ask you to come and come to their hotel. So it was freelance work. And that was a really exciting, glamorous period of stuff. But underneath all that was this kind of tragedy, and heroin was kind of holding me back. Because, you know, I got sort of addicted, obviously. And it's not something that's easy to manage. And if you're working and you've got a career. So, you know, it meant I became unreliable.
Things
like that. So it was a struggle. And I went through periods of trying to get treatment, and, you know, friends around me were very supportive, but when you're in that grip of addiction until you're ready, it's hard to break out.
It is. And it
took me a while. Eventually, I did actually, after several failed attempts to stop and try and control and all the rest of it, I did actually come across the thing that really helped me, because I'd had detoxes before, but I think, you know, it's fair to say that I discovered what they call 12-step fellowships. And that was a different experience for me. It opened my eyes up to what was going on, and it meant that I had, there was a solution, and I could do something about
That's right, And this, we're going back. What are we talking about now? How many years has this been since you...
In recovery?
Yes.
Well, I'm very pleased to say this is my 31st year in recovery.
31st, that's 31, wow. That's amazing,
Yeah, I was very fortunate that I stopped, just as I said, just after 30. You know, and in fact, I went into treatment in 1988.
Right.
And I haven't looked back since.
Okay, so after treatment, you were still single at this time?
I was single, but I did meet somebody, and I very fortunately went through the proper stages of courting once. I actually did it the right way. And we got to know each other, and she was in recovery too. But we both made it essential that we concentrate on ourselves. And that seemed to work. And so after 4 years, we got married. And, that, you know, that and we had a daughter. She's 26 now. I mean, to be fair, unfortunately, we did part ways a couple of years ago. But we were together for 25 years, and I've always said to her, that's the longest relationship I've ever had.
Well, it's similar to me. I mean, 20 years ago, me and my ex-wife parted, and but we knew each other over 25, 27 years. And we, you know, I have three daughters, and the youngest one is the same age as your daughter, and she had a baby last weekend, he says casually. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah, it's been wonderful. But